And today we are with Carla Fiorina. She is from Torino, Italy, and she is what I'm going to call an international photographer. She seems to go everywhere and photograph, well, not everything, but a lot of very interesting things on the street and about people's lives. We'll get into that in a minute. But Carla, thank you for being with us today.
Oh, thank you, Bob, for inviting me. I'm very happy to be talking with you.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you could be with us. Carla was highly recommended by Glenn Capers. If you remember, Glenn was a guest of ours in the summer of 2014. Fabulous photographer. He looks like a really good teacher. He's some of his students are just amazing, and Carla is certainly one of them. So glad you could be with us. You know, you just have such a, I don't know, a broad body of work, and it's, I don't know, so in depth, and you know, it's just amazing. I just wonder if you could give us a little bit of your background, how you got into photography, and what you do with it.
Well, okay. First thing I think that has to do not with photography, but with the kind of pictures I take is that I studied languages and literatures. So in both in high school and then in university, that's what my studies were. And if you study literatures, which for me meant like German, Russian, French, Spanish, South American, and English American, so you get in touch with a lot of stories, because if it's a poetry or if it's a drama or if it's a novels, they're all about stories, and stories are about people. So that's my educational background. And then what I did next was doing a million different things. The photography was always there, was always a little bit in the background for a long time, because I didn't have time to develop the passion. Then there came a moment when I finally had the time. I chanced to meet Glenn Capers, and I did a workshop with him, and a whole world opened up for me. And so all the stories that I had read and that were in my mind for a long time, I still read a lot of books, so I keep reading stories. And that became my main topic in photography. I was not that much into landscapes or into macro or these kind of things. I was into people, and that's when I really started looking at people in a different way. People I meet, people I see in the street, people I meet when I travel, and looking for stories, the stories in their lives, the stories on their faces, on their wrinkles, on their, you know, whatever they do. And that's how I started. And that's my main interest in photography. I would say just that, not other genre, not other things.
So you're a student of literature, you said you even studied some American literature. You said,
"Oh yeah, well, yes, I'm a student. I was a student at high school and university also American literature, English, and all the various languages which I studied carried the literature with them." And then what happened in life was that I also started writing about literature, writing textbooks for Italian students, and so that allowed me to go even more deep into the lives of the authors and the stories that they wrote. And yes, and so also American literature, yes, English and American literature especially.
Man, you're a regular scholar.
No.
You're too smart to be talking to me.
No, absolutely not. But that explains, I think that explains a lot about my photography. You know, it explains why I have all these pictures of people, but not portraits. I don't do portraits. There is always a context. There is always a background. There is always something else that tells a story somehow. So.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that you study literature. We had a guest on last summer, a guy named Matthew Wiley, who's in Toronto, Canada, and he is teaches literature, and he finds most of his subjects as a result of things that he's read or studied, and they just jump out at him. Does that happen to you? Do you actually see a subject that reminds you of maybe a character or a situation from something you've read?
Not consciously, no, not mm-hmm. consciously. But it's everything that happens for me. It happens in a kind of a stage. You know, the street for me is a stage, is an environment that could be part of a novel or a short story or a drama. Or so I see the subjects as being the characters on that stage, and with they are doing something is happening, and they are living their life, and I'm just there to record that the little bit of their life, the stretch of life that we are sharing in the moment.
You know, you travel in a lot of places that are a very busy street life, and you know, so you're walking on, you're on the street, and you're in some place, and there's just lots of people around, lots of things going on. That would be overwhelming to most people. How do you pick something out from all of that? I mean, how do you spot that? How are you able to zero in on it? Maybe you don't even think about that, but you know, that's something I'm always curious about, because I tend to be overwhelmed by lots of activity.
That's a very interesting question, because actually, if you travel, especially in countries in Asia, India or Cambodia, I mean, it is overwhelming. Nepal, how many people are around you, surround you, and each of them has a story. Each of them is doing something, and most of them are doing something interesting, something special. So it is a matter of, I think, of a habit to select visually special in that moment, and that's what I really love about street photography, the fact that it is very, very challenging. I always think that if you are a landscape photographer, the time to decide what you want to shoot, what time of the day. You have the time to set up your camera and decide on your settings. And then when the right time comes, you are there and you're ready and you shoot. And the same is with macro photography or, you know, studio photography. Now, what is completely different in street photography that is extremely challenging for me is you have no time for anything. Everything happens so quickly, and snap, and it's gone. And the scene is different, and what you saw that you wanted to shoot is gone. So you have to be ready with the settings of your camera and for the light that may change in a split second. You have to be ready to spot something and shoot it. It is difficult. It is quick. It is very fast. So that's what I think also what draws me so much to this kind of photography, the fact that it's challenging. It is like someone wanting to do the 8,000s. You know, if you are a mountaineer, you don't go up hills. You want to go mountaineering, seriously mountaineering. And so that's what street photography is for me. And I choose, I see something and I know I don't have time to select more or think more about it. The only time I have is split second shoot. So that's very interesting for me.
Yeah, I liked your comment. You said you don't think street photography needs creativity. You just shoot what is there.
Yes. That's very important to me. That's another aspect. I don't create anything. I don't set up scenes or I don't interfere with what is happening. I'm there as a spectator, and it's like being in a theater. You know, the actors don't see you. They should not see you. The theater is dark. So if there are 20 spectators or 2,000, actors don't know. They are there. They do their thing. And for me, that's exactly where I want to be. I don't want to be seen. I don't want my subjects or my scene to be changed by me. I try to be inconspicuous, totally inconspicuous, and if they realize I've taken a pictures, it's too late. I'm done, and I've moved on. So there is no creativity, and if there is creativity, it's a setup scene. It's a setup picture. I don't do that.
Yeah, I can certainly see that. But, I mean, how can you be one of the actors if you, you know, if you get up close and personal? You must be fast.
Yes and no. If I move fast, then they see me. Mm-hmm. Because any fast movement is seen, there, if someone is doing something privately, even if it's in the street, it's a private moment, maybe he's talking to some other person or whatever, and I move faster, you know, rapid movement catches the eye, and the scene changes, and the subjects look at me, and they stop doing whatever they're doing, and that's not what I want. So what I do is I move towards the subjects, very slowly, but, you know, steadily. And hopefully the scene doesn't change. A little bit of changes, of course, because gestures may be different. You know, body language may be different by the time I get there. But and then when I'm really real close, yes, I shoot. And hopefully it is still as interesting as it was when I first spotted a scene. Of course, sometimes the subjects see me, and I do get my share of mean looks. but that's usually after, you know, and I don't. So I have my picture. It's like that's what I wanted. I got it, and I just move on. Or smile, give them a nice smile, and you know, that's it, and move on, walk on to wherever I'm going. And it is in a way, it is an advantage being a woman. Yeah, you don't get confrontational usually with people, you know. They don't react maybe the same way they would react if a man had been shooting. Or, you know, for a woman, it's just like, oh, thank you, and a smile, and walk on.
Sure, you're going to be much less threatening.
Oh yeah, but then I'm not tall. You know, I'm not particularly tall, and so I'm in a crowd. I don't stand up in any way. I don't wear anything flashy. It's always very bland colors, very, very, you know, suitable to the place I'm in. I don't have big cameras. Mm-hmm. I use an Olympus OM5.
Yeah, I see. You carry two of them all the time?
Yeah, I carry two, the Olympus with a wide angle and another OM5 with 45, which I very rarely use. It is just in case, for some reason, I want to get closer, but I generally don't use it. So it's just one camera and I never change lenses. I never, you know, I never stop doing anything. And so I blend in pretty well, I have to say. But part of this is just because I'm small and I'm not, you know, towering over anyone.
So you shoot mainly with a 12 millimeter, which is what, a 24 millimeter equivalent on a full frame camera, right? So you're working pretty wide. And then do you mainly shoot aperture priority? So you leave it, you know, with a pretty small aperture?
No, I shoot manual.
Do you? Really?
Totally manual. Yes. Totally manual, because it allows me to make changes quickly according to what is changing in my environment, and I can change the aperture, I can change the time. Sometimes I shoot at a certain shutter speed, and then for some reason things start getting more frantic, or you know, for some reason people are moving more quickly, so I need to change the time. And then it's all manual.
Of course, when you do that, the camera is going to be faster too, because it doesn't have to. Yeah, it doesn't have to calculate the exposure.
No.
Yeah, that's a good.
Well, it's a little camera. It's a little camera. It's a little great camera, and it doesn't. It's not the threatening. It's not the speakers. And then I think this is very important, because what I've noticed is a lot of people doing street. They use long lenses. They use, you know, 70-200 or something like that, because they don't want to get close, and they feel safe if they have some distance between them and what they're shooting. With the result that these lenses and these big cameras are very conspicuous, very threatening, and very, you know, people see them and see that someone is taking their pictures, and that is not what I want to do, and I don't think it is wise in any way.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, I used the EM5 for a while. I liked it a lot. Only I didn't like having to look through the viewfinder or the back of it to change the aperture.
Well, it is also a camera that allows you not to look into the camera. You know, you look at the little monitor, and you can tilt it so that for some reason, if I wanted to take a picture from up above me in a crowd, for example, in a crowded train like in India, and I can just stretch my hands, my arms up, and then I can see what I want to see, and I shoot. And then it's a light camera. It's a very light camera. That's great also.
Yeah, that's true. I do miss that tilting screen.
Yeah. That's a great feature too. It allows you really to sometimes I look at a certain direction and I'm shooting in another direction because I don't want to be seen, and so I just stretch out my arm, you know, and point the camera sideways and shoot, and more or less I can see in the monitor what I'm shooting. Yeah, that's another feature that in street photography, if you want to be, you know, part of the scene and not directly engaged in the scene, that's great.
Yeah, that's a good point. So you go, you travel a lot, obviously, and you also live in a very interesting place. What the rest of us in the world would think. I mean, have you run out of things to photograph in your own community? I mean, when you're at home, or are you out shooting on the street there, or is it like, already, I've seen that 1,000 times, I don't find it interesting anymore?
Well, yes and no. We have a big open-air market, very, very large, and that's always interesting because there are a lot of vendors, vendors, and they are doing their business. There are people there, and something is always happening. What I do that is always also very interesting, I go to the railway station. I had a permit, a special permit made for me, because you cannot usually shoot in railway stations. It's not public public area. So I just you know, went up the chain of command and had a permit made. And so I go to the railway station, because there it's always different depending on what is happening. For example, there is a football match, you know, a big soccer match, and there are people coming over from other towns or from other countries, and so they get out of the trains, they sing, and it's something really special every time, and that's changing, you know, every time. But then, yes, it is more and more difficult if you live in a town, you know, to find something special every time. That is not easy. There are a few pictures which I'm not really interested anymore, and that's a typical picture of posters, you know, advertising posters. Mm-hmm. With a beautiful girl, and then you just stand there and wait for the old lady to come by, or for the man that looks at the picture and thinks, oh, wow, what a girl. You know, this typical juxtaposition of street pictures. I don't do those anymore. It's just, I find it boring. After a while, it doesn't appeal.
Pictures of other people's pictures.
Yeah, pictures of yeah, these pictures that are, they are classics, you know, and they're still people that take these kind of pictures all over the world in towns. But for me, it's no longer interesting. And then I don't like standing there. This is the typical picture of. If you are a photographer fisherman, you know, you wait for the fish to get by, and you stand there because the advertising poster is there. I'm more like a hunter. I like to go hunting for my pictures and not to stand there and wait, you know, for people, the right person to pass by.
So there are hunters. And then there's gatherers, huh? Or hunters, yeah. And fishermen, yeah.
Hunters and fishermen. The fishermen just stand there and you know, waiting for the fish to say, oh, I'm hungry. Well, hunters, they have to walk. They have to go and find things interesting. There are a few pictures I still like, which is reflections, for example, in the shop windows. Mm-hmm. But there are no stories there. It's a completely different kind of street photography. You know, it is a photography that has to do with composition, with something pleasing, something, you know, maybe the mannequins. I still do some of that. Or the street photography that has to do with architecture, with structures. Mm-hmm. Like here in Lisbon, for example, there is a very interesting railway station. Very modern structure. And so last night I said, I want to try and do some shots here. It was interesting, but it is not, you know, it is like typical composition, very, very balanced out. You know, you have to have your escalator in the middle, a person that is going up or down, these kind of things. And they are still nice pictures, but it's a different kind of street photography, completely different.
So how long did it take you to really start to find your, I don't know, I guess for lack of a better term, find your style or find your way of doing things? You know, you talk about, you know, standing there and waiting, you know, by the advertising poster. I think everybody does that when they, you know, they're trying to find their way around this genre, and it, you know, I think it takes a while to find, you know, kind of find your own way, you know, after, you know, after kind of copying other people. And you know, how long does that take? How do you do that? Maybe, do you even know? I
mean, that's a big question, because that was something I really was wondering myself. You know, in the beginning, you shoot a lot of different things. You shoot everything that moves. It's like you go hunting and you shoot every little bird, more or less. Every old man on a bench in a park, you shoot that. But then, after a while, of course, you start thinking, okay, I've run out of all the people on benches. What else is there out there that, you know, makes it an interesting picture? And I tried to figure out, you know, my own style. What was it that I wanted? I wanted to get close to my subjects so that you could see their expression, you could see what they were doing up close. And that started, you know, making me wonder if I could keep that type of photography consistent. I have to tell you this little story. I took a workshop with Bruce Gilden.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I did it because I was intrigued by the a little documentary about him on YouTube. And he happened to be in Torino, and he was available for workshop there, and so I took it. And it was very interesting because if you see his work and see how he works, how he shoots people in New York especially, then you wonder if that is a possible, you know, way to go. Mm-hmm. And it is not what I really wanted, because he's very, very, very aggressive. And I knew it, but I was curious about what he had to say about his photography. So the interesting thing is, after doing that workshop, I knew exactly what I didn't want, and that helps, because what happens is, if you don't know what you want, where you want to go, but at least you know where you don't want to go, it's already a step forward. And so this workshop showed me, you know, one type of street photography that I really didn't want to get close, anywhere close to. But I still wanted to get up close and personal with my subjects the way Bruce Gilden does, but in a different way. And that's where, you know, I started researching how to do that. And that's where Glenn Capers made all the difference, because he taught me how to do that. He taught me how to get close to my subjects and shoot them and shoot what really matters.
Speaking of Glenn, he talks a lot about his workshops, but then he doesn't. And it's kind of interesting to be speaking with somebody who's actually studied with him, because what can you expect when you take a workshop with him? I know he will do them for a very long period of time. And what was your biggest takeaway from working with Glenn?
Well, it was everything, because he has a way of focusing your attention on what is happening. And this is the first thing. You think as a street photographer that you already know what you want to shoot, and actually it isn't true. There are things that you don't notice, and there are things that just happen before your eyes and you don't see them. Mm-hmm. So the first thing was he taught me what to see while I was out on the street. The dynamics of the scenes that were happening, what to expect that would happen. And that's also important because I never thought that what was happening before my eyes would change and in what direction it would change. So he taught me to say, okay, this is what you see there, but what is going to happen next? So you have to kind of foresee what is next, so as to be ready to shoot it. If the scene changes and you already know in what direction the scene may go in changing, and then you know where to be also. If you have to move sideways or closer, or and that's the first thing. It would be difficult to say because there is so much that he taught me how to get close to a subject without interfering and without changing the scene in any way and leaving the scene also unchanged for so that others. Street photographers, or other photographers or other people can be there and not always make people feel they are being fired at with cameras. So it will be difficult because it's a very, very intense workshop with him. It's a million different things that I don't even remember now, because it's something that you learn and you practice, and it takes also some time to realize that you've learned something, that filtered through all the information and all the important things that you should know, and then in the end you realize that now everything makes sense. Everything is has changed my perspective, and it changes the way I shoot. And I think it got me where I am now. That I'm really comfortable shooting, and I think it's helping me around the world. Anywhere I am, I can shoot and be comfortable with. With shooting and with the people that I shoot.
So you pay attention to your subject, but you're also watching your surroundings at the same time, so you can anticipate how things might change?
Yes, this is one of the important things. Yes, because everything happens so fast, but if you are trained, and there are two people speaking and they are, I don't know, moving their hands in a certain way, or the situation is interesting somehow. But then you also keep looking sideways, because maybe somebody else is coming in, is coming into the scene. It's a third person. So is this third person going to stop and change the scene, or is going to pass? And if he's going to pass, will the fact that he is there, maybe motion blurred, does that add to the scene? Because there is a third element, maybe it's motion blurred and it's on the foreground, and that maybe also adds interest to the scene. And so you wait, and you don't shoot, and you wait until this person is closer, and then you shoot. Or something changes in the background. Also, the background is always important. There are people passing, or something is happening in the background that makes the scene richer. And then you have to pay attention to that as well. Or the light changes. It's getting, a different light. The sun is coming out. And where is the sun going? Where is, So it is very complex when to shoot street in this way, It's so many elements you have to take into consideration, and that's what Glenn Capers taught me.
And you do all that without affecting what's going on around you.
Yes, exactly. Yes. As I said, sometimes it happens that they realize I've been shooting, or they see me because I'm leaving the scene, for example, and the person or the persons see me leaving the scene and see that I was there with a camera. But it's too late. I mean, everything has happened already. And so it's just, very, very smooth, very slow, and very blend. I always blend in with the environment. And and that's what makes my pictures so close. Because I'm there, and sometimes I even listen to what people are saying, even if it's not the language I understand. But yes, I've been shooting in places really crowded, like in trains or in places like this. If you are in India, it's crowded everywhere. So. And that's also challenging because shooting in a crowded place makes every choice more difficult, very, very difficult. But it's intriguing.
Yes, very. You talk about using a wide lens, and could you picture yourself using one slightly longer, like the 17, or you always shoot with the same one all the time?
Same one all the time. I just have one lens, and it's this 12 and the M5. That's all I shoot with.
I think there's a lot to be said for just sticking with the same lens for a long period of time.
Well, yes, because you know exactly what is in the picture.
Yeah.
You don't have if you keep changing, or you have a zoom, you never know what is that you are zooming in and out, and you have to put the camera to your face, and that makes you conspicuous. While if you have one lens, you know exactly what is going to be in that lens, and if you have to back up to include more of the scene, or you have to get closer, you know it, and you don't have to figure out what is in and what is out.
Mm-hmm. One less decision to make.
Yeah. Yes.
several less decisions to make, actually.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. That's it.
So you just finished shooting, or maybe you still are, but I know we're doing this discussion. It's April 6th right now, day after Easter. So you were in Spain, right, in southern Spain for Holy Week. And you've just finished that, so it's pretty fresh in your mind, maybe too fresh. What were you trying to accomplish during this? Is this a project that you're working on, or just some place you wanted to be at this time of year?
Well, actually, it is inside a much larger project. I've been shooting, religion at large, religion in various ways in India, in Nepal, in Peru. I've been in processions, I've been in churches, I've been following a little bit of what happens in people's lives when they are showing their spiritual side. So in Sevilla, it is very peculiar because they have these processions with people wearing robes and hooded long caps, cone caps, and I had been wanting to see that for a long time, and that's again another quite a difficult thing, because there is of course a huge crowd, and they are walking very slowly, and there are like 500 to 700, 800 of these people from different brotherhoods wearing different colors and walking, carrying crosses, carrying very, very big candles. So in the night is the best time because the candles are lit and it's a very eerie atmosphere. Also because everything is slow. But what is more interesting is the crowd, the people there. It is something that has to do with religion, but it's also a sort of a communal gathering. So entire families with children, infants, toddlers, grandparents, they are all out in the streets, they are eating, they are sitting on little stools, and it's like being in a giant park with all these people there. So I also shot a lot of people because I thought it was very interesting that there was this religious aspect in public along the streets of Sevilla, but at the same time people were having, you know, family time or time with friends, teenagers all there, you know, spending time texting, having fun. And so it was, the crowd was as much as interesting as the processions, but it was quite special, the whole thing. I really enjoyed it all. It was not easy because the crowds were really big, but I think I got good shots of them.
So what do you do with these photos? Are you going to be publishing them as part of a larger project, or you just don't know right now?
No, I don't know right now. No, I don't know. I don't know. It's it's like you there's something you are interested in. It's like with books. You are interested in an author or in a theme, and you buy the books, you read them. And then you just pile them up in your bookshelf. But you don't know. Then maybe you will go back to some of the books and you will say, "Oh, I want to read this again," or "This book has something interesting. I want to think." After some time, I want to think about what was written there. So it's the same with pictures. I let them rest, you know, mm-hmm. in my files, and then in the end, when they are, they've been there for a while, it's like wine, you know, you let them, the wine grow older, and then it tastes differently, and you are surprised when the event is gone and it's not even fresh in your memory, you get surprised of what you really, really, really saw and shot. And that's in the moment when I decide what to do with the pictures.
So have you actually looked at the photos that you took last week, or are they just, they're just waiting for you to look at them sometime in the future?
No, I did. I always look at what I do, because sometimes, like in this case, I was there two or three nights, three late afternoon to night to shoot. So I needed to see, you know, what the light was like, if all the settings were correct, because I don't check the settings after every picture like mm-hmm. many photographers do, you know, oh, change the setting. I kind of decide on what the perfect setting would be for that particular spot, light and place, and then I just shoot. So when I go back, I look at the pictures, and if there are changes to be made and I have the chance of doing it again, then I just let the pictures rest, sleep, and until one day they wake up and they talk to me and say, "Hey, I'm here and I'm a good picture. What are you going to do with me?"
Oh, that's great. That's great advice. Speaking of pictures, let's take a look at some of yours.
Mm-hmm.
And okay. There's just so many. I encourage all of you, all y'all, to go and take a look at everything Carla does. She's got some really good stuff on 500px and other sites that we'll list. But I'm going to ask you about this one photo in particular. Carla sent me a number of photographs, not too many in color, and I'm going to ask you about this one color photo. It's photo picture of a little guy in front of a doorway. And inside the doorway, there's looks like maybe his sister or somebody's having her hair done. And he's just standing with his back up against the wall, looking right into the camera. And I can tell you're really close to him. I don't know if you know which one I'm talking about.
Yes. Oh, yes, of course. Yeah, this was taken in Nepal, some little village up on the mountains. I don't even know the name of the place. It was not even a village. It was a cluster of homes. And we stopped there, and there was this family, and they were waiting for the school bus. And so there was this mother or grandmother inside, and she was combing the hair and getting the hair ready of the little girl. And there was this little boy just outside, and they were there. There were like 10 or 12 people with kids waiting for the school bus. So we stopped there and, befriended these people with, smiles and nothing more than that, because, of course, we cannot communicate. And this little boy was interested in me, but in a way he was not involved. He was just looking at me with a surprised look, and so I just sat down at his level, and I positioned myself so as to have also the scene in the background, the mother combing the hair of the little girl. And because, as I said before, the background sometimes holds as much interest as the foreground. And in this case, that's exactly what it is. The story is the little boy is there, and he's ready for whatever is in his day. And in the background, there is a scene of family life in the making, in a moment when it's their own life, their own day. I'm not, changing anything, interfering or doing anything, just recording what is happening there. And that's my style, basically. I left that one in color because the colors were so consistent. They were very, very good with each other. And mm-hmm. That's something that I really like when pictures are in color. I don't like clashing colors. So I really try to find also situations in which colors agree with each other, or they are pastel colors, or they are toned down, not flashy, and not, because I think that a color has to support the scene and not interfere with it.
So, and aren't you the same person who said you don't worry much about composition? I think this is a wonderfully composed photograph.
No, composition is important. Yeah. Is important, but if you have to have the time to compose, in that situation, I had the time. The kid was just there, standing there and looking into me or into the nothingness, and in the background, what was happening was not going to change, mm-hmm. and so I had the time to do. Good composition, but otherwise, sometimes it's just. And I don't think that a good street scene really needs a stronger composition, because if it's all about composition, then it's not about a story that is happening. It's not recording something interesting. If you're too much worried about composition, that's not the strong point of the picture.
Yeah, and speaking of that, let's take a look at another one. And something caught my eye with this photo. This one's in black and white, And it's a boy with what looks like a tube of glue. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, he's going off to you know, make something with that glue. But then I notice he's got a bag with that, which then makes me think he's probably going to put glue in that bag and breathe it.
Exactly, yes.
And I thought, my goodness, you talk about a story. Is that what's happening here?
Yes, yes. This is something that I shot in Nepal, and it's a project. These are street kids, and they live on the streets, and they have these little tubes of glue, and they put the glue in a bag, and they breathe it, and that's what makes them feel less hungry, and it's also part of the culture of these kids. I follow them around for a few days, and I have a few pictures of them. I follow them as they go around with bags, collecting garbage here and there, which then they sell, plastic bottles or cans. I took pictures of them as they go to the cremation sites, because that's on the river, and that's when they play and play with each other and swim in the river, and they have fun, and it's a very nice moment if you think of the life they lead. But anyway, yes, that is glue, and that is what they sniff, and it's very tough to see that.
Yeah, it would be. I mean, you're photographing them, and they're living this life that, you know, you wouldn't really think about.
No, but you see them around. They kind of walk around in packs, you know, in packs of five or six and different ages. There's a group of around 10 years old, and then there is a group of older kids. And they are, you know, they scrap a living as they can, but what they do then, I have pictures that are much stronger than that one, you know, with kids after they've been sniffing, and their expression is really difficult to see, and because they're kids, of course.
Yeah, I was interviewing a newspaper photographer. And she'd tell me that on some of these projects she'd go on, or some of these assignments, she'd have to just stand there and tell herself, don't cry, because, you know, she had to, you know, photograph some very moving things. So it's really hard to separate yourself, I guess, and still be involved.
Yes, it's just that when you're doing this kind of projects, and I've been doing quite a number of those, there is the moment when you are there and you are taking pictures. It's a very detached moment. You are concentrated, focused on what you're doing. If you get involved in what you're seeing, then you cannot be even, you know, it just doesn't help. So if you do this kind of photography, you know, documentary photography, social photography, you really have to be outside of yourself. I did for example a gypsy camp in Reno, and that was very interesting and very, very difficult. But the conditions they lived, you know, with the rats in and out of their homes, their shacks, and with the children playing in a garbage, you know, it was very, very difficult. But again, I was there to document what this gypsy camp was like, and in those situations, you don't really get into their lifestyles or their difficulties. You're there with a camera, and so It's a different thing. It's not the street, of course. It's a different. It happens out in the streets, out in the environments that are public environments, but it's a different thing. Yes.
Yes, it is. There's another photo here that I really like, and you brought up something you said you're very interested in. It's a picture of an older woman, Stutta Baba, walking down the street with a cane, and she's got a shawl over her head. She has a very empty look in her eyes, and you know which one I'm talking about. She's walking against like a stone wall on her left.
Actually, no. This one, is this just a woman walking along a wall?
Yeah, she's along a wall and by herself. There's somebody on a motorcycle behind her and, way back behind her.
Well, it doesn't, on the moment it doesn't, I don't remember it.
That's okay. We'll come back to it then, if you remember. Well, we're definitely going to put it, include it with the article. Let me ask you about another one then. It's a photograph of a little girl, and looks like in the subway or something. She's got these white towels behind her. There's a telephone, a payphone behind her, and looks like she's coming from dance class or something, and she's posing for you.
Oh, it's a little girl.
Yeah, little girl. Yeah, she looks to be about 7, 8 yes. years old.
Yes. Oh, yes. This is a subway in New York.
Okay.
That's a subway in New York, and she was there with her mother, and she saw me, and I thought it was so cute because she was a shy, but at the same time she had this little girl's pose. And that's the situation. I think the picture is slanted. It's not, the composition was not perfect. I even think her feet are not in the picture, but it was just such a very fresh scene, of this little girl. And, I really loved it. It's a black girl. Yeah.
Yeah. So the New York subway.
It's a New York subway. Yes, that's another place which is my favorite. New York subways. You can see a lot of interesting scenes. Very, very special. Yes.
Yeah, you can, and the light's terrible down there.
Yes, that's where you really have to have your settings. Balanced before, because then you have no time for anything.
Yeah. Well, here's another one in the New York subway. It's on the subway platform at Bryant Park.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, the reflection.
Yes. That was so weird. Yes. This man was reading a sign there, and it was an advertisement for Sai Baba, some Indian guru, sadhu. And he stood there reading and looking at this sign forever. So I would have expected, like, you're attracted by an advertisement of some Indian sadhu, and you read it quickly and then you move on. You look at something else. He was like a piece of rock there looking at that. And in the picture, what comes out is his reflection on the pillar, which I hadn't seen. I was concentrated on taking a picture of this man looking at the sadhu. But the sadhu doesn't show in the picture, but it shows his reflection. And very interesting. It was weird, the way he was just not moving, a muscle, and looking at that. Like he had seen something really special in his life. That was, one of those things that just happen, and you wonder, what the hell was he looking at?
And most people wouldn't have noticed that.
I was there, and you know, when you see someone looking at a pillar and not moving, you start looking more and say, what is there that is looking? And the scene doesn't change. He's not moving. So you become more and more intrigued, and you know.
Yeah, that's true. You don't see people standing still very long in a.
No. Even with trains coming and coming and going, and it wasn't moving. It wasn't doing anything. So this is the times when I think this is a story, because he's not just there looking at an advertisement. There is something happening in his mind. There is something happening in his brain, and there is a story. Of course, you don't know the story. You can imagine a story there.
And the one you have is probably better than what was really going on.
Yes. Yes. That is what is happening. Because the story is, you don't actually maybe figure out what the story is, but you can invent your own story with the street photography. You take a picture and then you start seeing a story where maybe there isn't one. That's the magic of it.
Yeah, and we've got time for one more, so let's take a look at this one. And this one gives you the ability to read many stories into it. It's a picture of a little girl running. She has a dress on, and she's running next to a wall with some pillars on her right. She's screaming or laughing.
Yes. Yes, exactly. This is a typical example. This is a girl. This is a school in Kathmandu, and I was standing there. I'd been talking to the teachers, and we were just around there for 2 or 3 days, and suddenly this girl came down this corridor, this hallway, and she was. And she was running and screaming, and I took a whole series. I shot her since the moment when she came out of the door at the end of the hallway, and then when she came by me, she turned on her left and got into a classroom. And she has this long hair, moving because she's running. And the thing is, I have no idea if she was scared, if she was playing with friends. The expression is very difficult to interpret. It could be like she is really scared and frightened and then running towards me. But actually, the situation was not a situation where she should have been frightened, and it was a day where there was some sort of a party time in the school. So, but interesting, yeah. That's a story that you just have to make up in your mind. What do you really see? What is this girl doing? What is she? Where is she running? Yes, and so it's, thank you for asking about that picture, because I really like it.
I couldn't pass that one up. I thought I'd save the best for last.
Okay, thank you. So
Carla, where can people find more about you and find out about your work and the things you do?
Well, the only place where I actually put my pictures, but there is no consistency there. It's 500 Pix under my name, Carla Fiorina, because I'm not really into putting out projects, full projects for the moment. There is this place called Witness Journal, where I contributed a couple of things to their projects. One is the Mahakumbh Mela in India, the pilgrims, and another one is about abandoned homes in Iceland, which is very eerie because these homes have their Most of them still have all the furniture there, and you know, blankets and covers and towels, and everything has been left as it were was when the person left it. So that was interesting. And this is called the Witness Journal, and it's a journalistic online magazine. But other than that, it's a 500px where I just share my pictures with whomever is interested in looking at them and maybe leaving a comment, which I always appreciate.
And then you have a group called One Picture Stories on 500px?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. This is because, as I was saying in the beginning, you know, I think that good pictures, street pictures especially, are one-shot pictures. Now, what is the story in these pictures? Because and I encourage people in the group to write their own story. So someone puts up a picture with something happening, whatever is happening, and somebody else just makes up a story, which maybe has nothing to do with what the real story was or what really was happening, but it makes for interesting reading. You know, you see a photograph and suddenly you imagine a whole situation behind the shot. Yes, that's
a great idea.
If it's not about stories, what is pictures about?
That's right.
Yeah,
so, out of all the things you've been doing, what's the one thing you're most proud of?
Ooh. What is most proud of in terms of what? Well, the thing that I really, really am proud about, because it was difficult and it was very moving, and that was the Maha Kumbh Mela. The Kumbh Mela is a gigantic religious gathering that happens in India every year in a different place, but every 7 years. It's enormous. It involves 30-40 million people. And what I did there was I followed the pilgrims. I didn't. It's a religious thing, and it involves sadhus and, you know, holy men of all. And all the pictures you see around, they're all about the holy men. You know, they dip into the Ganges, and they are very, very special and sometimes very crazy people. But for me, what was interesting was instead was these old people, ill people, having people who cannot walk, and they walk for miles and miles, and they get to these places in cars, in buses, on top of trains, and they walk and they eat in the street and they sleep in the street. And it's such an incredible show of spiritual life that it got me really deep. That was the one that was special. And because I think all the photographers go for this sensational sadhus, you know, naked or not naked or painted, or, you know, I wasn't interested in that. I thought the people, the pilgrims, that really, there are people dying there. There are people that get lost in these immense crowds, and they cannot read or write. They cannot find the people they travel with. There are incredible stories for these pilgrims that I thought were really worthwhile telling, more than you know, the sadhus and the sensational aspect of this gathering.
Wow. Well, we'll definitely put a link. Do you have a gallery?
On 500, there is, yeah. There are like 9 or 10 pictures, but I have a video which I did with the whole thing, you know, from the night they get there to the following day, and then night they leave. I have most of my pictures that I do videos with, because 5 or 6 pictures when there are projects sometimes are not enough, you know. For me, they're not enough to tell the story. So, but these are not online. I should one day I'll put them online somewhere.
You definitely should. I've seen a couple of yours, and I think they're really cool.
Well, maybe I will send you the Meha Kumbh Mela, and then you tell me what to do with it.
Okay, please do. Send it.
Okay, I will.
All right. Well, Carla, thank you very much. Really appreciate you taking the time, especially in the middle of your travels like this. So it was just, it was excellent.
Thank you. Thank you so much for letting me talk. You know, it's always a joy to talk about photography.
Oh, absolutely. I could talk about it all day.
Yes. It's I don't know whether it's a passion or a disease.
It's both.
It's both, yes. It can be a terminally ill disease. But anyway, so thank you so much for having me, for talking to me. I really appreciated that.
You're welcome. Anytime.
Okay, Bob, thank you.